Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, it's the Mitch and Pajak podcast. We're back together in the same room. All the eagle-eyed viewers and listeners, you pointed out that the one recorded with Goldberg last week was clearly from a while ago. It was a long time ago. But it all led to this, because that was almost a pilot for before we did all this stuff. So thanks very much for the feedback on that one. It's been really, really good.
Has it?
Really, really fascinating, interesting fella. And if you haven't listened or watched that one, yeah, go check it out. Mark Goldberg is one of the most fascinating human beings, because I've spent hours in his company now, and I still can't quite figure out what's real and what's not real.
How many times did we watch that little video you got of the awards?
So we were at the FBAs, and Goldbridge World was up for an award, and I didn't catch the very start of it, but when it was announced, he went, I'd forgotten all about that. He was sat on the table opposite me, but then I filmed him, and then he was annoyed, but then he went and collected the award, and it all just adds to the...
It's the mystery.
It is the mystery.
It's the not knowing.
Of the man.
I've never, you've once spoken at length about the aura that people have, and, I'm thinking Alison Becker here. Mm. This guy does have an aura, Mark Goldbridge, does he? And I don't know whether he's the cleverest person that I've ever met, or he's not.
But he's just, that's just who he is, he's genuine.
It's brilliant though, and yeah. Having met him and spent some time with him and stuff, he's a genuinely nice bloke as well. And I jest, it was a really great interview that you did with him.
Thank you.
Worthy of the MXP channel,
yeah.
Even if I do say so myself.
Yeah, we've got another guest one lined up actually with Chris, and a very special guest which we'll reveal in a week or two, because you're going to jet off, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But it's the Page time. This is our alternative Champions League final special. We said we weren't going to do loads of Liverpool stuff on this, because obviously we've got Red Men and I do stuff on my channel as well, but Champions League final's massive, and we've experienced a couple of them in our lifetime, so we're going to talk about a lot of that stuff and react to some of the cool stuff and mad stuff and interesting stuff that's happening in the build-up. But first, Chris Pajak, what are you looking to purge from your system this week?
It's Champions League related, funnily enough. You've been privy to my demeanour, shall we say, as questions have been asked of me this week thus far. And there's only one thing that I can page, and it's the fact that people keep asking me, when are you going to Madrid? And I'm not going to Madrid, and it's fucking doing me head in. I love my wife, and I love my kids and stuff. I really want to be at the Champions League final, though, and I'm not going. And I die a little bit inside every single time somebody not only mentions the Champions League final, but also asks me what my plans are for the Champions League final, because I'll be in a fucking Euro camp in France, probably watching it on this, if there's no television, or driving into Paris to try and watch it on my own somewhere. I'm let's say... disheartened slightly. We've got to do all the preview content. The preview content's been incredible. We've done so much. We've spoken to Jamie Carragher, Wijnaldum, Klopp, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Henderson. Just the list goes on. It's just like fucking watching a porno, as you would say, without getting to finish the job.
It's so we're obviously at the media day, which we'll pick up on. But yeah, I had to cut so many people off at the pass who were like, And like, I was getting asked the questions. I was playing the pronoun game just to try and not bring like Simon Hughes, journalist Simon Hughes, is going like when he is going. I'm flying out on this date. I am staying here. And then it got something when he clearly didn't get it. It doesn't mean he's not an investigative journalist, like, you know what I mean? Because I offered him enough evidence there, and he proceeded to press that. A couple of us just don't ask Chris about it. Just don't ask. But I have to hold my hand up.
You threw me under the bus at one stage.
I did tell you. I told Jürgen. Now, you can see in how I led into it. I thought he might offer you some sort of consolation.
Bullshit.
No, honestly.
You were looking for something that made your vlog worthwhile viewing. I mean, and you fucking got it, to be fair.
That was a byproduct. But I genuinely thought, because I go, because I said, oh, he's heartbroken. And I was genuinely thinking, Klopp's a nice fella. He likes the pair of us. He'll have some words of consolation for you.
He's a broken man.
He can't be there. Booked a family holiday.
2-year-old and a 4-year-old.
He really did.
And everyone keeps saying to me, how are you getting there, when are you going? And I just die every single time. Just outside Paris in a Euro camp.
Me and my dad are going, we'll see.
Yeah, of course.
Sorry, Chris.
He laughed at me fucking face. He laughed in my face.
He did.
Twice, maybe three times. It would have only been worse if he'd done the full ha-ha from The Simpsons. But he basically did. That's the most annoying thing. He basically did exactly that. The fucking man that I adore more than anyone else at the moment. The manager of Liverpool Football Club, the next fucking Bill Shankly, laughing in my face. Not only that, I'm still harbouring deep fucking regret over missing the interview you had with him last year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it makes matters worse. Now he's just laughing in my face.
It wasn't the response I was hoping for, but it was a better response than I could have dreamt of.
You're an absolute twonk, if that's a fucking decent word that we can say.
That is a late 80s insult at its finest. That's a Red Dwarf insult. We'll just check that. We'll just run that through the check just to make sure that's not hideously offensive in any way, shape, or
form. 20, 30 years ago, it was definitely fine, but now we may have to check that. Yeah. And if it got bleeped, it was the word twonk.
Yeah. What a twonk. I'm sorry.
You're fucking smiling funny. As you're saying it. You're funny. An absolute divvy.
It was too funny. You know what? If it had been like any other reaction, but it was like someone had given him an electric shock. He just pissed off. That's so bad. Then moving on.
I can't. No. I'm not ready to.
No. So I'm choosing to purge this weekend. It's a bit more serious. It's not football related, but I was going to purge all of politics. But it links into it. The coverage of politics in this country. I really like politics. I find it fascinating. I'm really interested. I love talking about it. I love getting other people's opinions and stuff. And it's horrible, and it tests you at times, because when you get outside your bubble and you've got people who've got staunch opinions on one way or the other, and that's the thing of it I don't like. But the coverage. So I walked into the shops this morning, and
what shop?
A local shop with the Tells newspapers and stuff like that. If they want to sponsor this, by all means they can, and I'll say their name freely, but until they do, but anyway, there was two headlines that caught my eye, and the first one that caught me, because it was nearest to the aisle I was walking down, was like Corbyn Labour's anti-Semite shame or something like that, and I was like, oh crap, like what's going on with all this now? And then the paper next to it said Corbyn to back Remain
referendum,
back second referendum or whatever, and I was like, it's fucking horseshit, isn't it? Like, there must be people in the journalistic industries who wonder why their trust has been eroded. How the fuck are you meant to trust the mainstream media when because my opinion, I am left leaning, but I'm not staunchly, weirdly fucking, you know, super, super left. I've got, you know, it was a great line from Jason Manford, and he says, we've all got a bit of right wing in us, you know, and in his line he uses along the lines of, like, we all believe that all, you know, all humans should be treated equal, and like, prisoners are entitled to fair treatment and rehabilitation, but when someone breaks into your house, fucking string up the bastards, like, you know what I mean? So, it, you know, we've all got a bit of that in it, but I can't help but think that, you know, it's the horrendous bias that goes on, and it pains me that more people don't get on to how they're just tools used by both sides of the political divide to brainwash various people into believing what they want to believe. But when I see it from the Daily Mail, like, it's like the Mirror's covering the second referendum, which is that, but isn't it mad that on the day where he backs the Labour, reportedly backs something the Daily Mail are staunchly against, that the Daily Mail would choose to upsell the anti-Semitism stuff, which I'm not, if it's true, shouldn't be swept under the carpet, but I find it all maddening, and there's meant to be journalistic integrity. Maybe journalism's always been this, and maybe it has, it's particularly tabloid journalism, I guess, but it's just like the fucking internet. It's just become people servicing their own opinions and nothing. Whatever happened to impartiality? Whatever happened to telling us the news? Whatever happened to saying, this is what has happened, this is what is happening, and digging into the meanings and the rights and wrongs of it all? How are you meant to trust what's right and wrong? No one fucking knows. Genuinely no one knows what's right or wrong in the fucking Remain Leave thing. And the mainstream media not making it any easier, because it's like flipping a coin so you get the right outcome, or it's like speaking to being on the wrong side of a story, but you speak and you spin it and you spin it. You speak to close friends until they tell you that you're on the right of an argument. I find it all absolutely fucking infuriating.
It's mad. Like, listen, there's so many things there that you're absolutely spot on with. The one news outlet that is supposed to be impartial, that tries to be impartial, is the BBC, isn't it? Now, you're. Reaction there would suggest that it's not, but I watch a lot of the BBC News. I don't watch any of like Sky News or anything like that, and I'm not sure whether they are trying to be. I think they are trying to be impartial, to be honest with you. Now, there are loads of there are, you know, this morning, for example, they had someone who's just been elected to as a member of European Parliament, Majid, I think it was, mm-hmm. for the Green Party.
Yeah.
And they also had a guy called, I think his name was Nielsen, who is voted in from the Brexit Party. So they're there and they're having a conversation and they've got both sides.
Yeah.
And they're both there, but they're saying completely different things. Now, the problem for me with the BBC is the interviewer will have a certain slant,
mm-hmm.
and they will ask questions of both parties. But then you're asking the interviewer to be impartial, and I'm not sure that's the easiest thing for an interviewer to do. A good interviewer might be able to do it. The best interviewer might be able to do it. But if you lean one way, you're going to have a direction for that interview. So it makes it difficult for it, you know what I mean? So how can... You can't have someone who's impartial, because nobody's impartial in this country, give or take, through the interview. So where how can they even do it?
No, it is, and that's where you need to get true, proper, staunch professionals in, and, you know, you know them, and unfortunately they're increasingly few and far between. The problem the BBC's got is the BBC's funding comes from the government. And so... And we live in a time of austerity where BBC's funding is getting cut, and, you know, all this stuff is getting cut, and their paymasters are ultimately whoever's in charge. So they have to be careful. And what's also happening is, because they're worried about this reaction about them maybe having a bias or whatever, they're trying to be a bit. I think they're trying to be too partisan. But yeah, in that. It's all well and good. That's fine. If you give two opposing points, but you can't. It's not just a platform for people to say their thoughts and opinions. They have to be challenged and they have to be questioned. It's not just put up some fucking moron and go, well, he's a fucking idiot who's got a mad opinion. What's your opinion? Tell us your opinion. You've got to have someone you've got to get to the heart of what's the truth. What you've got to have someone. It's the responsibility of journalists in this country. This is the responsibility of the press, is to dig deeper, is to find out what is real and what is bullshit, to cut through. Because that's like,
well, that's it. You get two people in the studio and you ask them a question. You might ask them the same question and you're going to get completely different answers. Not only are they going to be completely different answers, they're going to talk about the things that they've prepared to talk about. Mm-hmm. And they will always, and this is the problem with politicians, they'll always just shoehorn in what their agenda is.
Yeah.
And they won't answer the question. And because they might have 5 minutes or 10 minutes, I think it was 5 minutes they had with them this morning, it's like, well, you didn't answer me fucking question, mate. Yeah. I'm going to sit here. I've got all day until you decide to answer me fucking question.
Jeremy Paxman's a massive bellend, but I appreciate his approach to political interviewing because it is, it's maddening. I'll be honest, like Tom Watson, he's even still a deputy leader of Labour. He's a fucking knobhead. I interviewed him years ago and I bit my tongue over it because he was at an HJC event, the Hillsborough Justice event, and it's just a friendly conversation about a nice event, and the way the politicians talk, it just makes you want to walk away and never go near a poll again and all that kind of stuff. And it's bollocks. And all it's just the thing that sparked it for me was obviously the EU voting this week. And the results were used to service whichever opinion you were looking to have. So if you were, the Brexit Party got massive gains, fair play, because look, let's be perfectly honest about this. The things at the core of the people who are voting for the Brexit Party and people who voted for Leave and all that, there's some massive core issues that need addressing. People are entitled to have those issues, whatever it is that's driving towards those things. But and then Labour lost, so that if you could go, well, look, Brexit won and Labour lost, but neither side of the divide actually lost any percentage or any footing in it.
If you add up Brexit and you add up Conservative, you're pretty much getting what voted to leave.
UKIP lost. UKIP took losses who went on to Brexit. Conservatives took losses which went to the Brexit. Labour took losses that went on to Green. And you know, by and large, we still end up with exactly the same split. It's horseshit.
The problem is, and I think, you know, I think I remember showing you this video, maybe you'd seen it yourself, is there was an advert about what's the article thing on the internet called about the freedom of the internet and all that type of stuff.
31, is it?
Something like that. And it was Berg 50. 50. No.
Article 50 is what 50. Gets triggered when we leave the EU. Yeah. Fucking spend all your time on the internet and you can't tell me what it is that's going to stop you from posting porn gifs on your fucking Twitter.
So I think Burger King did this incredible advert and tried to explain to its customers what it was and why it was bad. And what they did was, there's the fucking line. And for too long, political parties and companies have decided to be on this line or just slightly over to one side, leaning one way or the other. And Burger King went, we're fucking here. We're miles away from the line. Here's our position. And they took massive growth in sales because of that, because the left-leaning United States citizens decided to just go with Burger King. Now, you are cutting off a huge potential audience, but you're actually gaining, you know, repeat custom time and time again from another one. But this is the problem with the political parties. It's the problem with Labour. It's the problem with Conservatives over the last 10, 15, 20 years. Is they're too similar. There's not that many things that do separate them anymore. And I think, you know, Corbyn has needed to come out a long time ago now and say, here's where we fucking stand.
Yeah.
But you've got to make it clear where you are for people to make an informed decision.
No, absolutely, and that's the problem. But it's all fucked. And again, I fucking love politics, but at the point now, there doesn't seem to be any easy or obvious answer without there being an absolute fucking uproar over it. And again, the way people talk about it, and they're all fucking bollocks. I like the idea of Jeremy Corbyn, and I don't mind the idea of Labour, generally speaking. But the fucking horseshit. They've got no direction. They've got no purpose. At least I can, you know what I mean? I don't like conservatism. It's not my thing. It's not my thing at all, particularly. But my God, I mean, it's like the fucking Empire in Star Wars. At least they're committed to being evil, like, you know what I mean? At least you're committed to the fucking, to the certain way. You can cut through it. There's no fucking dalliances. There's like, not fans of the NHS, fans of privatisation, fans of private wealth, fans of, you know, of capitalism and all that. Great, at least you understand where they stand. At least if you're into all those things, you know to get behind. Fucking Labour, Corbyn wants to leave. Just as much as the people on the other side, he just can't come out and say it because he'll divide half the fucking Labour fan base. This is where we're at. It's football. Big football is politics has turned into footy and it's shit. Anyway, never gonna be unpaged of that. just briefly, we talked about the whole series up to this point. We missed the fact of the finale last week because we didn't do the podcast. But Game of Thrones, satisfied?
Loved it.
Did you?
I've read every word that's been written on Game of Thrones by George R. R. Martin. I've watched every minute of the TV show. Can't think of a better way to end it all.
I thought it was fine. It wasn't a massive disappointment. I wasn't thrilled with it. It was the ending that series set up, and I don't mean like in terms of narrative. I mean, it was, let's leg it to the end of this show. Like, we've got to get this show finished in this time. It's like anything you ever do in life, where you've got all the time in the world, and you realize you've got 10 minutes to get ready, so you cram everything you need to do in 10 minutes when you've been sat around for 4 hours. It was fine.
It made me so excited for the books. Mm. Like, so excited for the next two books. Because now I know where the ending is. It's brilliant. What the problem with the TV show for me is, as you just mentioned there, they rushed it. Mm. And that's fine. Because I'm going to get to enjoy the books.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed more than the television series anyway.
Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, they lost their way because George R. R. Martin, when he was writing the books, it was so in-depth and they were so big and the scale of them was absolutely massive that he gave them so much to work with.
Yeah.
And then he gave them the end story and they had to quickly work there. Yeah. George R. R. Martin will take his time getting there.
Or
he'll die. I mean, he's already taking his time getting there. It was fucking 8 years ago the last one came out. So for me, I'm like, brilliant. I know the ending. The ending's absolutely perfect. I couldn't have fucking asked for it better. Literally, for every character that's still alive and made up, there's dragons still in the world. Sound. I'm great with that. Wouldn't it have all been for naught if the last dragon fucking died?
Yeah.
I mean, so this is all brilliant. And now we're going to see how it was meant to get to that point. And that's what I'm looking forward to most of the books.
There was something that, at least they tied it up. Like, there's so many stupid plot threads for no, you know what I mean? It was like, what was the point of so many things that they did? And what was the point of John's secret reveal? It's just, whatever.
I think the point is that after all of that, you know, I know he goes off into the north and stuff like that, but there's not going to be a Targaryen. That's why they decided to put him there.
Yeah.
They've ended the line.
Yeah.
So there's no more coin flip over. There's mad Targaryens who are going to come and take over the country. They've installed politics for what it's worth into the Seven Kingdoms from now on.
They'll be purging the shit out of that in a few years' time.
Like when Bran turns into a tree or whatever he does and then maybe passes away in 3,000 years, someone else will be a king. It's just brilliant. It's just fucking superb. I just don't get the fume because everyone I've spoken to in real life actually likes the ending, doesn't like how they got there.
I thought it was fine. It was one of those things where, like, it was good fan service in the end, in that they just gave, because it gave you like the lives carry on. It was like at the end of the OC, where they basically except they went like 10, 20 years or whatever in the future, and it showed you the path the characters go down, so you got a sense of these are real people and they get to carry on their lives, and you have a bit of a sense of renewed hope of, well, there's some interesting stories and they can always bring it back if they want to. It's not like I said, which I predicted was they'll just kill everyone and everyone will be dead miserable about the whole thing. It was fine. I watched it and I was like, I had no emotional response to it one way or the other. It was like, oh.
Did the bookies pay out?
No,
on Bran, because I don't think he ever sat on the Iron Throne.
There you go.
And I'm sure the wording of that, who will sit on the Iron Throne, will get bent to fuck.
Given that I never got any money for me Mo Salah top goal scorer bet, I can't imagine. But did for Mane.
Well, I was going to say, how do you feel about the Mane one? Because you did get paid out for that.
Not for Mane, but not for Salah. Pricks. Never trust the bookies. Unless they want to sponsor Redmen TV for the upcoming season, in which case I will retract that statement.
And much more.
And much more beyond that. We've got some couple of random bits that have cropped up this week. Our good mate Rory, Chelsea fan extraordinaire, he's been on a number of rants about Sarri, and the one I saw from last night, I love Rory to bits, he's a good friend of ours, but he's basically wants Sarri out and he's desperate for them to have Jodie Morris and Frank Lampard. What was your immediate reaction to seeing that?
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Be made up.
Sound.
I would be made up. Like, we've just watched Ole Gunnar Solskjaer be given the Manchester United job, but it's far too big for him and he's nowhere near good enough for it. And it's starting to implode around his ears. And now Chelsea fans want
What? It could only be made better by if it was Lampard and Wise. Yeah. To be honest with you, you know what I mean?
Frank Lampard and Jody Morris. If you don't know who Jody Morris is, ask your dad. Dear God. Yeah, that would be absolutely glorious if that happened. Did you see the Man City chairman with a wonderful piece of PR spin this
yeah,
week?
Yeah, was it for the MEN?
With success, you know, there's a certain level of,
jealousy,
envy, called whatever that comes. That's part of the game. You know, when Manchester United dominated the Premier League for many years, they know what they had to deal with for so many years. That's part of the game. It's not easy for our competition. We know that. You know, by the way, the football world is very small, and word comes around very quickly. So, when someone somewhere in a leading position in any club says something or briefs something, guess what? We know about it. But the reality, we didn't buy the most expensive player in the Premier League. We didn't buy the most expensive goalkeeper. We didn't buy the most expensive defender. We didn't buy the most expensive midfielder. We didn't buy the most expensive striker. So when people throw that, what you know they throw at us, I go back, let's look at facts. Look at the facts, let's talk about facts.
For the Manchester Evening News.
Surprising.
Yeah, I don't know if that was Stuart Brennan or not. He was being it was someone who was very happy to be there.
If it was Stuart Brennan, he doesn't look like his profile pic.
Yeah, none of the journalists ever do, by the way. But yeah, this notion that we didn't buy the most expensive goalkeeper, we haven't bought the most expensive defender, midfielder, striker. Horseshit. They just don't have them. Now, they just don't have the record. Don't get me wrong. We talk about the politics and the media and all that. It's a tremendous piece of spin, and I'm sure there'll be Man City fans fucking out of all, 14-year-olds on the internet laughing. I'm going, look, he said it. So it is true. Look, it's truth what he said there. They said, how much did they spend on Mangala? 50 million?
Mate, they have spent on centre-backs about 200 million trying to find company, a partner. Just not all in one go. You know what I mean? They've had Otamendi, they've had Mangala, they've had Stones, they've had Laporte. That adds up to well more than Virgil van Dijk, by the way. It's just that we did it once. Yeah. And, we got ours for cheaper than you paid for four centre-backs to partner Vincent Kompany. You know what I mean?
I think it's mad. There's a great tweet which we'll put up, actually, from Cy Brundish, who I thought absolutely nailed it in response to it all. And he says, at their time of purchase, Edison, most expensive keeper, Walker, most expensive fullback, Mendy, most expensive fullback, Mangala, most expensive defender, Stones, most expensive defender, Kevin De Bruyne, most expensive midfielder, Raheem Sterling, the most expensive English footballer / teenager.
Facts. There you go,
they're
mate.
So facts. Honestly.
But the problem that he's got is it's very Trump what he's doing, isn't it? They're cutting down the other side and they're weaponising almost their fan base and whipping them into a frenzy to go and bat for them and stuff like that. And I think, the Man City fans need to take a step back and start looking at it properly with their eyes open and understand what's happening, because he's playing them.
City haven't had to break those transfer records last season because all the players that they broke the records for previously are still able to play for that team. Like, and if they had to go out tomorrow and replace Sergio Aguero, they would be break. They would be paying more than 75 million. If they had to buy Sergio Aguero again, he would cost about 120 to 130 million pounds. In fact, that's, football inflation. That's just the way.
I think they'd be buying Mbappe and it'd be 200.
Yeah, exactly. That's the reality of the situation. But I find it funny, and I'm glad that most people have seen through this. Looking ahead to the Champions League final, then there's been some cool things doing the rounds. Did you see Jurgen Klopp reacting to the baby player photos?
Oh, straight it.
Trent Alexander-Arnold. Yeah, our boy. I think he's from Switzerland. That must be Shaq. What a wonderful player, what a wonderful ambassador for this country. It looks like the sister of Virgil van Dijk, but it's probably Virgil himself. Wow. Is it? Well, it could be two, but it's probably Ginny, yeah?
He's English.
He is English. Daniel Sturridge.
That's Daniel Sturridge.
Same haircut like today, I like that. That's consistency. Mr. Consistent, James Milner.
The Virgil van Dijk, he's like...
It's his sister.
The thing, it's one of the weird ones because everyone's been talking about the Trent one, which is great, and the Virgil van Dijk one. The Shaqiri one, where basically he goes, some people think I probably should have paid him more.
He
looks at the camera though when he's saying it.
Oh my god!
My favourite was the James Milner because it was just James Milner, and then he goes like, "It's the same haircut, Mr. Consistency. At least he's consistent. It's James Milner," and you're like, "Brilliant." But I got one wrong as well. I said that Daniel Sturridge was Genie Wijnaldum as well.
I thought it was
the eyes. Like I was only looking into Genie's eyes yesterday. I only watched the video this morning.
Dreamy.
I don't remember, you know, when we met Daniel Sturridge falling in love with his eyes, but they definitely look like Gino and Adam's eyes to me.
Yeah, it was, brilliant. I love all the little bits and pieces that come out from it. The one that did Alistair Gold originally put this out, I think. This happens because we had this week, we'll talk about the media day in a minute, but we, you know, you get access to footballers kicking balls around and you're allowed to film it for the first time ever. You can get a bit overexcited and just, everything's gold, no pun intended for Alistair, but he's filmed the Spurs players doing a rondo. One, two, three. Oh, yeah.
Air quotes Rondo.
It's not the best.
No. It looks like if me, you, Tom and Si had a Rondo.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And all the staff had one and you and Tom were in the middle trying to chase it down.
I mean, yous wouldn't be standing and the Spurs players still were standing, so maybe that's not right. But when the video starts, it looks like a game of Piggy in the fucking middle. It's that bad, you know what I mean? And then there's about a minute where they can't string more than three passes together. Harry Kane's touch was off. Hopefully that stays true. Mm. Then Rose and somebody else decide to just pass it between themselves for like four passes. And I think that might have been their record, family passes. They got strung together in one go. It was absolutely fucking pathetic is what we're trying to say.
It was
not a rondo.
Yeah, he put out afterwards like, they were better than this. He basically apologised for putting out a shit video. So just delete it, mate, or just put the good one out. But he's obviously just gone, and there you go, there's some Spurs training footage that's gone, and brilliant. The internet's just gone, you know, full Nelson, full, in fact they've gone full Jürgen Klopp reaction. One of my favourite bits of interneting came up for the media day yesterday. I put a photo up of you and Alison Becker looking very, very sexy.
Like, you fucking prick. I mean, how many times you want to have a pop at me yesterday? You knew I was doing that face because you'd just done that Jürgen Klopp thing to me, so I was angry with you.
I thought you were smouldering.
I don't know that. Hang on.
I thought that was just like your come to bed face.
No, that's it now.
All right, go on.
Is that a smolder?
That's my come to bed, little boy or girl. Have some sweeties.
So you put it out, and like a fucking minute later, I've got a beard.
So someone photoshopped the beard onto you, and then I must admit, I did think you looked like Bill Oddie.
Yeah, you did. And you let the world know.
So they took it one step. They took it one step further.
Put an owl on me.
Put an owl in there as well. Absolutely unreal.
I love it.
That is a tremendous piece of photoshopping.
Well, I couldn't wait. I showed it to Shai when you had all got off last night, and we were looking at it, and I was going, that's a fucking unbelievable photo. He's like, I'm not sure it is. Can it be a filter? I was like, you couldn't put a filter on the whole picture like that, as far as I'm aware, on like Instagram or Snapchat or whatever. So I think that's a Photoshop. Yeah. And I was looking at it going, but like, it's like this fucking grey in me beard. It's beautiful, like, but it's horrible at the same time. And do you know what? I finally might have got over the fact that I can't grow a beard. Yeah, because if that's what I'm going to look like, fuck that.
That's what you'd look like if you had, like, a Castaway-style Tom Hanks left on an island for all of that. I mean, you'd have to be on
This is what I'd look like if I was left on an island for 3 years, Paul.
It would just be like these bits.
Yeah, just... Maybe a couple more of these fucking spots or whatever. Oh, that's about it. Like.
But, yeah, again, it was a bit of, like, vicarious living there. You got to see how it could look and... Better that you stay baby-faced.
I think so.
The baby-faced Avenger. So yeah, we went to the Champions League.
You know it's the Pink Whisperer, lad.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We don't have to cut this section out of the podcast again, are we? Okay, Sal.
What's the video? The Pink Whisperer.
Okay. We went to the Champions League media day. Is that... That's Robbie, isn't it? Doing his Wasteman video. Right, cool. Yeah, we went to the Champions League media day. We were very lucky enough to... Was I invited? We forced our way in. we asked and we pestered, and they finally let us in.
Which was fantastic,
Fantastic. But yeah, it was...
Do you know the most annoying part of yesterday? What? Is we had to do all the fucking work.
We had to do all the work. To be like, yes, you can come in, but it can only be two of you. And I couldn't. Now, bear in mind, the Chris has got a heartbreak of not going the final on the rise, and there wasn't going to be like Chris missing out on this, and I wasn't missing out on it. So it meant that Tom and Ty couldn't come, or Ross or whatever. So there was no doubt that we were both going, but then the very real realisation of we are responsible for all the recording that's going to be happening on the day, and the was a couple of moments where with Jürgen in particular.
Yeah, that was fucking embarrassing.
Jürgen, I managed to get Jürgen on the line, on the mix zone line. I've got him. All right, Jürgen, come for a few words.
Hi, how are you?
Are you good? You got it in? Is that mic working?
Just put it. It would be cooler. The red light is on.
No, honestly. Genuine professionals, mate.
Internal, external.
And the microphone's not working. And there's a point where I turn to you, and it's like we do a few of these things that people always ask us, do we ever have fallen out? And we don't really. But there was a moment where I looked at you like, just fucking get it sorted. You were like, just fucking keep your cool. It's gonna work.
So what happened was you'd had the road mic stuck in, and I've not told Paul this. This is the big reveal now. So you'd had the road mic plugged in. So we shoved the XLR in fast because I was running over with the cameras. The mix zone had already started because it was fucking 50 meters away. So you you look at me and I'm across and you're like, oh, no, come on. So I start fucking running towards you. The camera set up, we throw the XLR in, blah, blah, blah. And then you got Jürgen and we've not switched from internal mic to external. You go external, I'm like, flick it. And I put my headphones in and I'm like, nothing. And you're like, shit. And you're trying to turn to Jürgen, right? And I realise my headphones aren't plugged in. But I'm not telling Jürgen and you this. So I'm fucking picking up.
So I'm
and
filling.
You're turning away talking to Jürgen and I'm frantically trying to get the fucking headphones into the camera. And you turn around, is it working? I'm like, yeah, it's working.
I'm got filling. It sorted. I'm trying to fill, going, oh, they're professional lords, Jürgen. It's fine, it's fine. I'm going, just put the other mic on, anything. I've got a live one. And Jürgen ended up getting off on us.
Yeah.
He made some comments about going for a piss and it being ready when he got back.
Otherwise, he'd go for a piss and then a bro.
Which we haven't got recorded.
Which we have. And then he did another interview and immersively came back. There was that very brief moment of just where I just wanted to set fire to the world for about five seconds.
So then we have a bit of a long wait. The rap and then us are interviewing Oxen Chamberlain, aren't they?
Oxen Hendo.
So we go in there. We set our cameras up. John Gibbo from the rap let us set our cameras up beforehand, so we have a little bit longer with them because you've got 10 minutes exactly. Give or take. And then so we set up, we give them a microphone, we lend them an extra microphone and all that type of stuff. You get set up, you're doing the cameras, I'm doing the audio sound, we go outside, they do an interview, we go in, and they obviously the lads are already in the room, Hendo and Ox, and then we're there, I'm sat down ready to go, and Paul's like, he's looking at the cameras like, and he literally said, I don't normally do this, and you couldn't work out how to fucking
I was,
do
well, I was doing the audio check and I was like, it has been so long since I've had the responsibility for doing this. Like, I was like, just running through it. It's like, okay, they're in, the sound, the audio's coming through. I'm just going to roughly guess at what the levels should be. I'm going to check the red lights and everything. But I just went, normally got people who do this for me.
Sat there doing the interview and Paul's frantically walking around all the cameras trying to avoid them and not get, like, there was one point where you nearly went in front of the lens and you caught yourself, wasn't there? Yeah. And you kind of sort of went round the back of the camera and all this.
It was just basically freestyle belly dancing behind the cameras
it's good that it's not just the two of us anymore, because like Red better be shit if it was.
Yeah, so that very very very, and I thought the interview was brilliant as well. There's a couple of bits which people will be able to see. It'll be on the Redmen YouTube channel and I think we're putting some on the Redmen website as well. But yeah, there's good. There's a video we've done which we won't get to see for a few weeks or whatever. But we got Jordan then. There's some reacting to a video that his mate filmed of him when he was like 16 or 17.
15.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. So yeah, good day. But it made me feel loads better about the whole thing. I know you've got your own issues going on, but in terms of like, I very much needed that, like in terms of just the feeling, the spirit of positivity, feeling the vibe, because I started to get really stressed out in the morning. You know what it is? My fears around this final are not about the game. It's not about whether Liverpool are good enough or all that kind of stuff. And I talked about it a lot on this podcast and other places. It's post-match social media. I just can't. I don't think I can live in a world where Liverpool have lost a European Cup final to Spurs. I might have to delete Twitter via the medium of throwing my phone in the Mersey or something.
Well, this is why I didn't want Spurs. It's this stress that you get. But you're right. Yesterday went a long way in sort of just pushing that to one side, because didn't look like a team or a squad that was stressed. You know, Genie Wijnaldum did the press conference himself with Joel Matip, and they were talking for about 15 minutes or so. Then they go and do the training, and he was the last person stood talking to people in the mix zone, and he's already had media duties.
Yeah.
And he was outside for probably 25, nearly 30 minutes, I'd guess, talking to different people. Alison Becker did an interview in Portuguese, and he must have done an interview with someone for about 15 minutes or so. Virgil van Dijk stayed around for ages. Then they all went inside and did their licence holders stuff, a lot of these players as well. We obviously had Hendo and Ox, and they'd done like a 30-minute thing for the BBC. Then they'd done the rap, and we were the last ones for them. And they went down and out. You know, they were like buzzing for it and stuff. And it's like, That's the great thing about those days as a fan going to them, is that you get to just get a sense of where the squad is at, and it's not one that's stressed. It's not like me, yeah, thank fuck, and they're not worried about it. This is what they've worked hard for all season long. You know, if you work hard for something and you're nearly there, you're not going to be stressed about it. You know you've put the work in. Yeah. Like, I don't know this, but, you know, if you work for an exam and you get there, I imagine you're not that stressed. I was always stressed going into exams because I've never done any fucking working.
Yeah, I do a lot, and you're right, is that I used to get nervous about certain bits and certain things, like interviewing people and whatever. Like, you used to be panicky, but you get to a point where if you've done your preparation and you're calm, and you've been the toilet, and you've done all the things that you can possibly do.
Toilet's massive.
Yeah. If you've done all the things that you can do, then it'll go. You know what I mean?
We're quite lucky now as well that, like, you know, we knew yesterday that we were going to have Oxen End. I probably had an hour to sort of prepare some questions and stuff, didn't I? But then, you know, I wrote a few questions down, didn't actually use a lot of them because you just went with the flow a little bit and stuff. But then, you know, you in the mix zone, you didn't have anything prepared. You didn't know who you were going to get. And because we've done so much and you're so experienced at doing these things now, that you can just, I think there's a confidence that you get from, I've been unprepared for these things quite a lot. Yeah. And I know I'm going to get all right stuff regardless. Now, if I prepare, I know I'm going to get really good stuff, like, so yeah.
It was, but it was good. It was that thing I've said before. Like, you know, I think as football fans are the worst. We're all freaks. We're all panicky weirdos. We've all got deep-rooted anxieties that probably stem from all the shit that's happening in our lives and the things going around it. But elite-level athletes it's very comforting to be around people who are just amazing at what they do and super confident, because it definitely kind of rubs off on you. Tom gets that with us every day.
It's true.
So we got asked a question.
He's nodding profusely behind the camera there.
From Alexa Vujic. He said, could you guys talk about your personal experience of Istanbul? Obviously, you know, as we know, Liverpool Champions League final loom. It's the third one, really. I mean, it's not the third one of our lifetimes, but the third one of us being old enough to really appreciate them and understand what was going on. Because we were like, what?
Well, it's the fourth coming up, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. But what I mean is, in terms of the more recent ones, these are where they're at. But it goes back to going back to Istanbul. It's mental for me because, and there's a thing that happens when you get to a certain age where you never get any older in your own head. Once you become an adult, you stay that person psychologically, and you can change and you can grow and you can evolve.
We were 23 ish, something like that at Istanbul.
We were 22, because obviously.
My birthday's late, and yeah.
Not gonna do that. But yeah, so we were 22 at Istanbul, so I don't feel any different. It doesn't feel like 14 years ago to me in any way, shape or form. I was we were in our prime, and I'm very much not in my prime in that way. I certainly can't handle my ale in the same way anymore, as evidenced by our trip to Pop World the other week. But it's maddening about there's a generation of Liverpool fans now who've grown up without that experience. Mm. I was asking Tom and Si, you were 10? They were 10 at the time. Like, when I was 10, so let me work it out. When I was 10, I went to my first cup final when I was 9. So I went to the FA Cup final in 92. And I don't really remember the game. I remember elements of it. I remember bits of the journey and the trip and stuff. And I've watched the game back since, so that's probably where most of my memory of the game comes from, as I've added to it over the years. So I don't remember but I don't remember the ride, the journey to getting there. I don't remember the feelings, the emotion, the ups and downs of the game or whatever at all. And it's when you realise now that there's a proper generation of grown-ups who follow Liverpool, for whom they've seen no success. And we have sustained ourselves on Istanbul for 14 years.
14 years is far too long for a club of this size to get one of the big two, innit? Mm. Ultimately, you know, Premier League or European Cup and stuff. But that was an unbelievable day. Funny enough, I posted a picture yesterday on Instagram of me and Hendo and Ox. And one of the girls we used to knock around with, Kate Spink, posted, like, can you believe that, like, fucking 20 years ago, give or take, I think it was 18 years ago, we were sat on the roof of Owen's restaurant on the Fiveways for the Treble Cup parade.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what we were doing then. And she's like, can you believe what you're doing now? And I was like, no, if you'd have told me back then that this is what we're doing now, I would not have believed you in any way, shape or form. So it's mad. Even though we were an adult, we were nowhere near the people that we are doing the things that we love to do at the moment and stuff. And then you think just a few years later, we got Istanbul and, you know, then we have another European Cup final in Athens. And since then, I've been to your Europa League final, I've been to a Champions League final and all this type of stuff. And it's mad, but that Istanbul one, man.
You mentioned, actually, I wasn't sure I was going to pick up on, but I'd not thought about it. But in terms of the parade, that the treble one was unreal, because you're right. And it's something I wouldn't even think of now. But like I said, the 205 ways in Liverpool, which anyone who's been to Liverpool will be aware of, it's called something different now, isn't it?
The Wild Fig. It's called
the Wild Fig, but it's called Owen's Forever. And because you used to work there and we knew the manager and all that, we were able to get up on the roof for a bit. So we climbed up on the roof ready for the bus to come down. And then basically, we got bored sitting up on the roof at one point, so we got down about 2 minutes before the bus finally turned up. So I ended up having gotten the best vantage point of the whole parade. I ended up basically next to the bus, running alongside it up Queen's Drive, like fucking, you know what I mean, like morons, absolute morons. All these people who were up there and got this wonderful view.
But we started up there, and then so many people followed us and like just scaled this building and stuff, didn't he, like, and it was mad, like, and then yeah, we got to watch them really enjoy themselves up there as we were on the road.
What are your memories then of the Istanbul day? Because it's, we set a precedent that day, we set a routine that we then look to replicate in 2007,
which I'm sure a lot of people will have done, to be fair. You know, you see your team win a European Cup and you're like, well, we went to walk about, didn't we, about 11 o'clock in the morning,
because you
like
went
that.
Out, I think I'm right in saying you went to watch the Chelsea semi-final in walkabout, and that's why we chose that, because a few of us didn't. I stayed in and watched it on, like, back in the day when you could put a coat hanger into the back of your telly and get a signal on an awful picture. I watched the second leg of that Champions League game, and yous were all out, and you were like, come on, you're just coming into town, and we were like, oh no, we're all right, we're
yeah, so we did, we watched that in walkabout. That's why we went there. I think we got there like 11 o'clock, something like that,
basically for opening time, pretty much, like 11:12. I think we got in there to make sure that we had our place. Spec. And we did.
Yeah.
And we had the space well, like, kind of kitted out, until we realised about half an hour before kickoff that there was no telly in sight of where we were.
We're dickheads. We've always been dickheads.
We've been there all day. We've been there drinking for like 7 hours at that point. And then it all packed up. It was chock full of people, and we realised we couldn't see it.
Was that the one where we had, like, had we taken cards with us to play in the daytime, or did we learn our lesson?
That was Athens, because we were just bored off our heads, sat around doing nothing but chatting and waiting for things to happen.
So it was like, because it was, am I right in saying it's something like a 9 o'clock kickoff because of the time difference to Istanbul or something like that? So I think we'd been drinking hard for like at least 10 hours by the time kickoff was on. I mean, I can't really remember much of the game. My memories of it do come from watching the game back and stuff like that, you know. I remember a certain point we've talked about so many times at half time. I do actually remember you gripping me and talking to me at half time, but I'll let you tell that story.
It was mad, that, because obviously watching your life basically fall apart in front of your eyes when Milan starts scoring the goals, because we said this for ages and we keep talking about this, and why I think this year is different, feels different for Liverpool. Certainly they've had no right to be in that final. Have you seen that team? It's like Milan Baros and Jimmy Soare and Diego Biscans and whatever of this world. That squad was horrendous. But you're there and you think, oh, because you're there, you've got a chance. And then basically Milan just went, oh, and flex. And just pulled our pants down and spanked us everywhere. And it was a weird feeling. And I've always been a glass half full kind of person and what have you. But there's no reason for me to feel optimistic, that I felt optimistic at halftime. But it was that weird sense of everyone was so down the dumps and everyone was done, and you were off your head, to be fair. By that point, like, it's over. But we
did I know the game was over, though?
I mean, you didn't think the full game was over.
So I did better than Aubrey in Paris.
But it was... Yeah,
can
it was...
Can we put
it was
that clip in?
Yeah.
We're in the ascendancy, we're going to get them. Still there, penalty, goal, sound. No, but it's over.
No, it's not over. It's not over, that big. If you do this,
Yeah. But it was a really weird atmosphere because everyone was so down and dumped. Everyone was so, it felt like so dead and buried. And why not? And you know, you had like Andy Gray, I think it was, on the commentary saying like, oh, that's game over and all this kind of stuff. And I just got this weird thing of like, oh, well, fuck it. You know, look, I'll go and console a few people because there's proper tears and people really were fucked, like, and you know, understandably so. And then I just got this weird sense of optimism of kind of like, not that Liverpool were going to do it, but like, oh, well, fuck it. It's a Champions League final. For God's sake, we're here. There's 45 minutes. What are we going to do? Are we all going to go home? Are we going to sit on the floor and cry? We're going to watch Liverpool.
But I was quite comfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, it was just like, I'm not going to... I've got 45 minutes of footy here. If they've shown you can score three goals in 45 minutes, so it's possible to score three in 45 minutes. And that was all I had. So it was just going round, hugging people and telling them that it was possible. So yeah, my outstanding memory of that was obviously when the third goal goes in, of just a swarm of random people from across the top floor of the walkabout grabbed me and picked me up on the shoulders and paraded me round the top floor. You said, mate, you said we could do it. And yeah, I did. But yeah, I mean, fucking hell. I mean, I'm sure people would have come round and filled me in if we'd lost that 6-0 for being that optimistic gobshite.
You said they could score another three.
Gobshite. What was dead funny is we walked out at the end, obviously made up and all over the place, hugging and kissing random people. We got three steps outside and I immediately lost you. I ended up in Chinatown in one of the Chinese restaurants, obviously. And it was empty apart from one couple that were in there who were clearly, guys, clearly an Evertonian. Yeah. I clearly realised he'd made a massive mistake at this point. And we were the first people in there. But within 10 minutes, it was just bouncing, singing songs, you know, like, it was just absolutely unreal. Tell the people how your night went.
I don't know whether I went straight home. I can't remember if I went straight home or not.
I think you attempted to go straight home.
If that's true, that's probably true. I did definitely attempt to go home. That's not actually what happened. I get confused sometimes because I've done this a couple of times now. So as to which bus I got and which night I did this on. There's certainly something around my birthday. I think I did something similar. Needless to say, I think I tried to get the night bus home, which is never a good idea, especially when you don't get the right bus.
Is this one of those situations where we've all fallen foul of, where when you add a letter to a bus route, it makes a massive difference to what that bus route is?
I think I'm telling the truth. This is certainly how I remember it. It was called the 79N.
Okay.
Now, the 79 is the bus that gets me home in Liverpool. The 79N is not the bus that gets me home.
It's very much not the bus that gets you home.
It got me to Widnes, but by the time I woke up.
So just for people who are outside of the sphere of the Northwest.
Wool. It got me to Wool.
It's basically about 10, 15 minutes outside of Liverpool.
Yeah. So I fell asleep on the bus and I got woken up by the bus driver saying this is the end of the line type of thing. And I think I remember trying to say, well, are you going back in? And he's like, I don't know whether he just blagged me head and he didn't want me on his bus anymore, but he wouldn't take me back to Liverpool. I don't know whether it was his last stop or whatever. He's like, you've got to get out. So I got out and I tried to ring up a cab and I found, I'm guessing the internet was around and you could Google a phone number for a cab in Widnes. I don't know whether I was able to do that, but I definitely know that, you know, 72 or the 80s is a cab company in Liverpool. So I probably dialed Alpha and I think I might have stopped the black cab thinking about it. And he wouldn't let me in because I was too drunk. Fair play to the fella, I was far too drunk to
be getting in. You just fell asleep on a bus and gone to a completely different town.
So then I think I got into another cab and then I think he decided after a couple of minutes, this isn't for me.
This is not the passenger for me.
He basically left me on a street corner in Widnes somewhere. And then everyone knows my brother's a Blue and he obviously wasn't out drinking. So I think I phoned him and I think he came and picked me up in the end and took me home.
I parted long into the night. That night, it was a very good day. The one story I've mentioned, you've referenced a few times in places, but I haven't talked about in a while, was that we're mates with Bob Paisley's granddaughters, and one of them, Carol, was in our
year group, but not in our school, in our group of mates. And I had this 1990 Liverpool tracky top that was my dad's, that was
the tracky top of destiny,
which was dubbed the tracksuit top of destiny after the fact. But at halftime, this story goes that I gave me tracky top to Carol and got her, basically hugged her in a bear hug for the start of the second half, and Liverpool scored all the goals. I once told Steven Gerrard that was the reason that we won.
How did that go down?
Yeah, he didn't.
Red balloon?
Yeah, he didn't. I think he probably preferred to think that it was his Herculean heroics and physical endeavours and him scoring a header from 18 yards.
But has he got the
yards.
Proof?
Yeah, I mean, yes. He's literally scored a goal and played at fullback in the Champions League final.
But had you not done that, Paul, maybe you wouldn't.
You know, the butterfly effect, Chris, is all I'm saying. The butterfly effect. Me putting a tracksuit top on someone and giving them a hug had a ripple effect. Didn't. And Stephen Gerrard was not happy to be told that. Just a little advice for anyone looking to speak to footballers. Don't try to discredit their successes by applying some sort of random logic pertaining to yourself
them. Let's not even use the word logic, because it's not really.
Absolute logic. Yeah, no, it's not. Doesn't work. So yeah, that was Istanbul. And what was funny, the parade the next day, I was still so pissed. So big. I don't. You working that day? Where were you working?
Britannia.
I dragged myself up because you'd had to. A couple of mates of mine came over from Sheffield because I've told this story in the past, but I moved back from back to Liverpool during between the legs of the Leverkusen game in that year. So they came over. One of them was a Liverpool fan, and one was a Man City fan, just to.
Be a part of it, like,
just to see it and soak it up and admire, because the story is that there was a million people descend upon Liverpool that day. People just woke up in that morning and felt compelled. Yeah, exactly. And we went to the flyover, where you come off the end
by the
of
Rockets.
The M62 by the Rockets. And I had the camcorder. It's one of the very first things I ever filmed, and I wish I had the footage to put in. I really don't think I have. I'm sure it'll surface at some point in the future. But I stood on the barrier on the top of the flyover. So this is probably about 30 feet in the air, maybe probably more. If you think about it, 40, 50
more,
feet.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. It's just it's about not even a foot wide. And I was stood on this at the peak of it over the and holding the camera up. And I was filming the parade. And I'll see if I can find it. If I can't, I'll have to explain it to you. I was shouting the Liverpool players, so like Cara and Steve, you're at the front. So I'm going, Cara, Steve, trying to get away. He's trying to get them, nothing. Trying down the line. And at the very end, as the bus just comes past, Harry Kewell's on the back. Harry! And Harry Kewell sees and gives a wave. And the line I used was something along the lines of, "You fucking useless gobshite." So angry with just won the European Cup. Liverpool players wait out. I was so angry at Harry Kewell, it was unbelievable. But I also had spent all that time. The press bus went past first, and I was flicking the V's the whole time, going, "You can't use any of this footage. This will be the footage." Absolutely, as we've established on British Rock, I was a fucking gobshite when I was in my fucking late teens and early 20s. My highlight of the whole parade, though, was. Stood there, it was just wall-to-wall cars, a sea of bodies, the traffic came to a standstill, they blocked it off, they wouldn't let anyone over the flyover, and they wouldn't let anyone under it. There was one Evertonian stuck in his car under the flyover in his Everton shirt. What a knobhead. Like, why you got... He'd obviously just gone to prove a point. Everyone's walking around in the position. He obviously wanted to make a stand and make everyone realise that he supported Everton.
And that they finished fourth.
And he was... Oh, mate. And he was stuck in his car, surrounded by Liverpool fans celebrating the European Cup. People banging on the windows, going, hey!
Rocking his car.
Hey! Five times! And he had to sit there for half an hour...
in a traffic jam surrounded by Liverpool fans. It's one of those memories that even though I was bladdered, I will, you know, never forget.
Was it 2001 we were chasing the bus down in, was it my car? We were trying to, I remember driving through the Swan and Queen's Drive.
Yeah,
and
we tried to catch it up later along down the way. God, yeah, I'd totally forgotten about that.
I was definitely in work for the 2005 one. I mean, I say in work, I lived in the Britannia pub in Liverpool above it and stuff. And I didn't do much work that day. I mainly lay on the sofa watching the news with the parade and stuff like that. Yeah, that's fucking gutting that I've missed that. And it's gutting that I will miss it again if we win it.
So just quickly, then Athens, obviously, there'll be a massive disappointment. It's funny because I've never watched that game back.
I watched the highlights, low lights back last week. For the first time, yeah, just prepping for the Carragher interview. So I watched like the 10-minute highlights. Fucking terrible!
Oh my god! But it's funny because we
just a shit side we put out that day.
Yeah, we played Zenden, didn't we?
And fucking who's the right winger? Pennant.
Yeah, Pennant was class for in that game. He for the first like half an hour of that game, he was amazing, and then nothing.
Yeah,
nothing after the fact.
He was shit though.
Generally, but what was funny about it was we tried to recreate the day, so we started early, and it was funny that we talked about this after the fact, and it's funny that we're now sitting 12 years later in the same situation still. That what did you sing about an hour before kickoff?
We won at 6-6. And I'm still waiting to get a second verse of that in.
I remember writing in my phone, it's 7 o'clock, it's an hour before kickoff. Chris has just said we've won it 6 times. It's at this point I've realised that we're losing this final. Just like, for all that was the first, I think that was the first instance ever of like the Pajakism.
Yeah,
of
the
precursor of the Umar Nias and all the things that have followed before it. Like, but yeah, we got bladdered. It was very disappointing. And I remember, again, I post that. Walking around the walkabout, consoling people and trying to cheer people up and all that, because it was mad, like singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" in the dying embers of that game when you knew it was dead and buried. Properly weird that, and I genuinely hope, because I know a lot of people flocked to Liverpool last year for the Kev, and more than that are probably going to be doing it this year around. I really hope that the people who do that get the experience of it, because nothing will ever come close. Nothing ever in my life has ever come close to that. Like the seeing Liverpool win the European Cup, even only on probably a telly that I wouldn't even have in a kid's bedroom these days. Like, but like that swell of bodies and going out into town and just that collective spirit of just the biggest party you've ever felt in your life, and then obviously carrying on for days after the fact, and then even like the day after that, we all went into town to try and get anything with 5 stars on it. We went into the club shop, and there's a famous story about like Brian Reid saying, like, Liverpool just didn't, like, it wasn't open the day after, and it didn't have enough misses. We bought like lighters. I remember buying a lighter with 5 stars on it. It was like my prized possession, everything, just to have all that stuff. So it's mad to think that it's 14 years since 5 stars became a thing. I'd give anything for
the hand gesture.
Yeah, no, you know, I'd give anything. It's mad that we could be looking, just as a slight tangent, reread the Watchmen comic, and there's a whole issue of it dedicated to how time is not linear.
Yeah.
All time exists at one point. So there's blocks of marble from 2,000 years ago that have statues embedded in them, that kind of stuff. And I love the notion that there's a pot, we're living in this time now, that this is the present. Liverpool 5 stars is the big thing, but we're living in a potential past in which this is the last time when 5 stars was a big thing for Liverpool, and 6 stars could just be the thing that's on everything for hopefully not too many years before 7. But you know, that's I love that as a that's what's got me so excited about the whole event. What have you got?
Not something for the show, certainly something for after the show. Okay. I'll show you in a bit. It's not too bad.
That's weird.
It's fine. How are you going to do it? How are you going to do the 6 if we win it?
What do you mean?
Thumb or a finger?
That probably won't be weird. I'll, two hands is a bit too much. Like, I'll just put a fist up.
Okay. What's next, mate?
What are you going to do?
I don't know yet. I'm gonna leave it. I think I've learnt my lesson after 2007. I like that one, actually. Yeah.
Some of you do some fucking some sort of Wakanda Forever style 3-3 yeah, celebration. Yeah,
brilliant.
Okay, we're gonna wrap up. But before we do, it's time for some life coaching. That's what you'll turn up for. You all need to live better lives. Chris and I have lived very long and fulfilling, taxing lives, and we've learned some things and we've made many mistakes along the way. Hughes 98 said, "Lads, how do you regain trust in a girl after you invaded her privacy by looking through her messages on her phone? We were dating 3 months and now she barely talks to me. How do I win her back, lads?"
I like my advice for this one is probably pretty redundant, but it would be don't get caught.
Yeah, I mean, I've never. It's weird, and I apologise to Hughes 98 in this, because I remember having a mate in Sheffield, and she had this fella who was really possessive, and he did this mad thing once where he was dead jealous of her, and he thought he was constantly having affairs and all this kind of stuff. And one day she woke up and went to go to work, and she couldn't leave the house because he had washed every item of clothing that she owned, so it was all wet. So she had no clothes, so she couldn't leave the house. Honestly, mate, fucking freak show. And I was like, I didn't think men did that kind of thing, because my only experience of it is obviously from my own perspective was I've been out with some girls who've been a bit odd in the past and done some weird things. So it, that mentality has never really computed with me.
I knew a girl I went to university with, I used to live with her actually, and she was a bit nuts as well. Like, and I once caught her in her fella's CD collection scratching the CDs. All of them, right? That, I mean, passive aggressive to the max.
Wow.
So she'd taken all the CDs out of the case and was just taking a key or a knife or whatever it was and was just scratching them from the outside to the inside, every CD, and just putting them back in the cases. This isn't someone that she's not going out with anymore. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, well, you know, and he's like, he's never going to know you did it. And he's like, and you're still with him? And it was bizarre.
My God. Yeah, I get some people do this. And I think that, look, bringing it back, I think, I'll be perfectly honest, trust is a very difficult thing to regain in relationships. I think when things are broken, it's very hard to get over that lack of thing, because you've broken trust by doing it. And I would be, if someone did that, for a start, you know, I would be thinking, like, why? What have you done? And my thing I often find in life, I don't know whether this is true or not, is that we often put ourselves into situations, and I think, like, people often think things of people that are really what they think of themselves. So it's like, if you think that people are talking behind your back, it's because you talk behind people's back. So you presume that other people acted the same way that you do. So you I wonder whether, and I don't know whether this is true, but I often find that people who go through people's phones, obviously, maybe it's just because they have trust issues, but I often find that they've had stuff that they've done, so they believe that other people are capable of it. The trick is, if you've got the trick to a relationship, a relatively successful relationship, it's lasted long enough. If you ever got an issue with that person, just ask them about it. Just be upfront about it, because.
So I would say genuine advice to this one is that you don't trust her, and that's the problem. And if you don't trust her, I don't think you're getting over that.
Yeah.
I've never been able to get over that. If I've had a trust issue with somebody, give you an example, maybe 15 odd years ago, something like that, I started going out with a girl when she was going out with somebody else.
Yeah.
And I never trusted her, obviously, because she was willing to cheat on the fella that she was with to get with me.
Yeah.
And that, like, although I went out with her for a few years and stuff, it never went away.
Yeah.
And in the end, that's how it ended.
Yeah.
As well, yeah. To be fair. So if you don't trust them and you're going through the phone, find someone you do trust. Find someone that you like and you do trust, rather than just someone that you like and you don't trust.
Is the kind of thing.
I would say, from the flip side, she probably ain't going to trust you again, so you're wasting your time.
I think the thing of those is, what are you looking for? What are you hoping to find in that regard? Because, I mean, I guess if you've asked and they've said no, then you've got, that's the thing about relationship. You've got to take people at face value in that stuff. If people are prepared to go to bat and say no, and it's hard because it means that you're putting yourself out there. It's a daft analogy, right? But like in a football, bring that's like a football thing. I remember when Jen Chang was the head of communication for Liverpool, and he invited us in, and Liverpool were being linked to Gaston Ramirez, and he was having a medical every fucking 20 minutes. You know, it was no smoke without fire kind of situation. I remember saying, he said, "Well, I'll tell you the truth, and I'll treat you like journalists if you ask the right questions." And yeah, blah blah blah. And he said, "Gaston Ramirez," he went, "I can unequivocally tell you that there is no chance Liverpool are not injured. Liverpool will not be buying him, so you can run with that." And I was terrified of that because of speaking out and saying that's definitely not going to happen, because of all there was loads of like rumors and whispers and all that kind of stuff, and I didn't want to stake my reputation on someone's word. But you know, in love and life, you've kind of got to. You give them the opportunity. You've got to give them people. You've got to give people the trust and the time. If she then chooses to fuck you over, you can't insulate against future heartbreak, is what I'm basically saying, because it's no way to live, because you're going to constantly be on edge. You're going to constantly be treading on eggshells. You've got to go all in on relationships. You've got to go all in and give them the trust. And you've got to, that's what love is that you hand them... Sophie, you hand them your heart and you basically say, go ahead, it's yours, do with it as you please, and they should do the same in return. And if you choose to fuck the other person over, then that's ultimately on you.
Also, Hugh's idea, if you do get it with another bird, with the new GDPR laws, I think you're going to have to get her to sign something to say that you are okay to invade her privacy, just like the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, just a simple lesson in life. I mean, your bird will give you the phone. Like, you know, to be by large, but she shouldn't have to, and you shouldn't have to go through. That's just be upfront, ask the questions, and look. Ultimately, treat this as a learning curve. Chalk this up to life experience. If you fucked it, you fucked it. It's something you're gonna have to live with. But hopefully, it'll make you a better person moving on to the future. All the best, Hughes98. If you want us to give you some life coaching advice, you can do. You can leave it in the comment section on the YouTube. You can tweet either at the Paul Machen or at Mr. Blood Red.
If you want us to actually answer, though, put it in the YouTube comments, because we actually physically check that.
Yeah,
I mean, before the next show.
Yeah, definitely. Do that by all means. But if you're listening on iTunes, if you're listening on Spotify, you're listening on all kinds of podcasty type devices, make sure you give it a 5-star review. Much appreciated if you do that. Chris will be away next week. We'll figure something out in the interim. There is another special guesty podcast which we might well put out next week, but we'll tease that. So again, get us on Twitter and you'll find out more information about all that stuff. Other than that, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. Just the Champions League final to look forward to now, fingers crossed. Even though Chris will be in a ditch somewhere, that he gets to be happy. A happy man. Do it for Chris. Drop a like on the video for Chris. See you soon. Bye.